Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
And Mike Cosentino.
Today, we're really, really pleased to have a guest on the show that we've had on the show about a year ago.
When we first started.
Celinda Lake. She's a brilliant pollster and Democratic strategist.
We'd like to use her to find out what's going on behind the curtain.
Mike wants to know.
This is our Wizard of Oz here.
I guess Celinda has her own company, Lake Research Associates, Lake Research Partners, and she's done a tremendous amount of research. I mean, last time Mike, her resume was like 4 pages long, but today let's just talk to her and let's get right to it. What do you think is happening with the presidential race? And Obama is running against Romney. Ryan's been added to the ticket. Do you have any feeling about the race? Who's going to win, right?
And while we set up this question, Celinda, I want to... Good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
I just want to prove that there is somebody on the other end there. Yeah. you tweeted that Romney's numbers are... I don't want to use the word abysmal, but tell us about Romney's numbers at this point in the race, please.
Well, they're very unique at this point in the race, and I think it helps explain the Ryan pick, which is that they were uniquely low for a nominee at this point, and he was having much, much more trouble with the base than a Republican at this point traditionally has, or frankly a Democrat at this point. So you had a quarter of his voters who said they would consider someone else. You had only a third of his voters voting for him.
Wow.
You had a Republican enthusiasm actually declining. So I think that explains the Romney pick. The irony here is the Romney pick produced the least bounce that we've had in the last 9 presidential elections.
Yeah, well, you know, when they're talking down at my coffee shop, that there was no bounce from the, you know, I mean, this, first of all, these are guys sitting around talking about a vice presidential bounce in an election. I'm saying, when did all these guys get so politically sophisticated?
True.
But they're claiming there was no bounce. And but go ahead, finish explaining the lack of bounce.
Unfavorability is favorability is lower by far than most nominees. And I think, as bizarre as it seems, because everybody in the world has been paying attention to his budget proposals on Medicare and tax rates for the wealthy, et cetera. But I don't think Romney paid very much attention to it, which is funny. And so, you know, he goes, now, well, I've got my own proposal. Well, good luck for you. I mean, you picked this person. Presumably you support his policies. And I think they've handled that very poorly. And when you're out of the box, you pick someone to help you out, and then 2 days later you're defending him. This is not a good choice.
No, very good point.
We start one of the first programs.
Energize the Democrats as much as he's energized the Republicans. So this is a very flawed candidacy on the Romney part. Having said that, you have a very tough economy, and it would be very foolish to take for granted Obama's reelection, such a tough economy. And it looks like we're headed to more bad economic news this fall. So I think that one of the things that's really important here is not to take anything for granted and to be both focused on energizing the base and getting those last swing voters. And Obama seems very geared toward that.
Now, what we hear here, and of course Arizona is not one of the swing states, and so there's less activity here, but we're hearing that the undecided is a very, very small percentage of the American voters, and the campaigns are being concentrated in just a few swing states.
Well, two different things. First of all, there are very few undecided voters. But you do have 15% of Obama voters who say they would consider someone else, and you have 25% of Romney voters who say they would consider someone else. So that plus undecided leads to a quarter of the voters that are still up for grabs. But I think it does help explain why this campaign is as negative as it is. So I think you're going to see people still focused on energizing their base as well as trying to persuade the swing, and I think both are going to be necessary. In terms of, and also, frankly, to get the base out this year requires some persuasion. I mean, a lot of Democratic core voters, a lot of young voters have been very hard hit in this economy. And it's going to take some persuasion to get them out to vote.
That said,
you're right that they are concentrating on anywhere from 12 to 16 battleground states. And I think that will be a place, you know, where there is concentration. Now, Arizona's interesting, right, because you're not particularly swing this year, but you have the potential to be one of the key places that things may happen in the future. And I think that's a very interesting, there's some desire to base build because of that. And so that's a very interesting, you're in a very interesting place.
It's about a third and a third and a third in Arizona with Republicans dominating, but a third of the voters are independents here. And so when people look at the state, we're less right-wing than would seem with our crazy, crazy legislature.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think our third independents are mostly libertarians, but two things. I don't know if it was an AP story, but it certainly was going around, and it was in the Arizona Republic in the Sunday edition. And that's 90 million Americans aren't going to vote. They're just beat down. They said they're tired. And a lot of those are Democrats. They're just not voting. And Cokie Roberts said this morning, she said the Democrats are not going after the independents, and she doesn't know why. So I'm going to ask Celinda Lake, are the Democrats going after the independents?
I don't know where Cookie's getting that assumption from. I think if you look at the Obama advertising, it is absolutely geared toward independent women. And I think they've got a very heavy press on for independent women. So I don't know why Cookie's, and I love Cookie, and I think normally she's absolutely right, but I think in this case, she's wrong. And
well, actually, to be fair, she was referring to the Democratic platform and the forming of that.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
So you think the race is going to be very, very close this fall? Or is it going to break at the last minute one way or the other, you think?
You know, it's interesting. I think either one could happen. But right now, I think you'd have to bet on it being pretty close. And one of the reasons is the Republicans have really learned out about how to turn out their base.
Right.
And if you look at things like of the recall of Scott Walker in Wisconsin, Democrats reached their targets, but Republicans surpassed theirs. And in the Kerry race, we lost Ohio because the Republicans did even better GOTV than the Democrats did. So in the last 2 years, the Republicans have really taken a page out of the Democratic playbook and very focused on GOTV, and they know how to do it. They do it well.
Let's get out the vote, folks.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so the race is going to be very, very close, you think. None of us expect you to be able to predict everything exactly. Nobody's been able to. But you mentioned women and the Obama campaign's advertising toward women voters, and we've had what we sometimes call the war on women, this attack even on contraception. And we have in Ryan a fellow who is against abortion, even in the case of rape and incest.
That's right. And he believes in a very strict interpretation. He would have a constitutional amendment on fetal personhood, which would mean that you would be in a situation where in vitro fertilization would be outlawed, many forms of birth control would be outlawed. You would have miscarriages being investigated by the police. I mean, it's ridiculous. So you have a very, you know, ironically, I think the Romney people had tried to tap down the so-called war on women, and nominating Ryan is a perfect way to have elevated it again.
But he's a charming, attractive guy. He puts a charming, attractive face on extreme budgetary policies and social policies, right? I mean, he's dynamic and so forth and so on. How much does that count? mean, people don't like Romney.
I think there
was
a race to define Ryan. And I think the Democrats, the coalition partners, and Obama were very swift in defining him. So that, and people are really paying a lot of attention. People think that these are very important elections. And so I think that facilitated the task. And you had, you know, he is a very appealing campaigner. He does good constituency service. That's how he's gotten elected in a blue-collar district in Wisconsin and his family there. But people had no idea who he was. And it was really an open, you know, a blank sheet in terms of defining him. And I think the Democrats got it done better.
We did one of our first programs on Democratic perspective on the Ryan budget, and we tried to talk to people about how he was planning to end Medicare as we know it, particularly for people under 55, and that there was kind of a bribe to older folks. We'll let you have the real thing if you'll just let us cut and give vouchers to people under 55 years old.
Well, you know, Slender, one of the reasons we started this radio program, Democratic Perspectives, is because of the lies. So many lies were coming from the other side. We felt we wanted to do this. And right now I'm seeing headlines again about, as a matter of fact, I tweeted the other day, Lion Paul Ryan. I said, and I said it had kind of a catchy ring to it, doesn't it? I hope it sticks, but can we, I'm seeing things on the Huffington Post, I'm seeing things on about the lies, and more lies. Rachel Maddow's covering lies, and more lies. And that, and they're talking about bringing back laws that, you know, England, other countries have rules on the media at least attempting to tell the truth. We don't have that. So, you got any insight on the lies, the Ryan lies, Lion Paul Ryan?
Let's take one of them. Let's take Medicare. So, their real weakness is Ryan is abolishing Medicare as we know it. So now we have a campaign where Ryan and Romney are making that their strong point, and they're arguing that Obama, because he's asking a little bit less money from some of the external providers of Medicare insurance, that he's doing the same thing they do. And so they're charging Obama's going to cut Medicare. How do you deal with such systematically and, frankly, cleverly thought-out lies?
Well, it is very clever. And they spend a lot of time thinking about language. And so they call this protecting Medicare from going bankrupt. And they don't tell you that they're taking away your choice of doctor. They're going to charge you $6,000 more. So we need more places like you to reveal the facts. And it is very disturbing because you used to, you know, gone are the days of kind of impartial news where you could expect to get something from the nightly news. Now it's very polarized, and we need our alternative. The right wing has controlled. They call it the left wing conspiracy. I wish I knew where that was.
Me too. I'm looking for that liberal media.
But they really control a lot more channels. And, you know, what's depressing, for the kind of money we're going to spend on campaigns, we should be buying TV and radio stations.
Yeah. One of the things I think is that whatever the truth is, they really believe they can just overwhelm it with money. They have all the money in the world. I was talking to a fellow across the street this morning. He said he was talking to a friend, and the guy said, this may be our last free election with the amount of money pouring in that'll be deciding them. Because the Citizens United doesn't even end with this election, right? I mean, it just keeps going. There's money was defining everything.
You get an email with Barack Obama's name on it that says, this is critical. And he began it, whoever wrote it. I expected to be outraised. I expected to be outspent, but I didn't expect to be outspent 2-1.
Right.
And we're talking, I don't know, what is it? We got a number on this yet? You know, I remember when $1 billion was being tossed around. Now, you know, Romney's going to have $2 billion. What's the limit here? Where are they going to go with this? How high is this going to go?
I think this, you know, we need campaign finance reform so badly. When you have had Democrats and Republicans in Arizona leading on it, you had the voters put it in place. We are desperate to get this nationally. And you have a really interesting initiative in Montana that I hope will pass, instructing Congress to say that corporations are not people. They don't fight wars. They don't have babies. They don't put their kids through college. They're not people. And they shouldn't have the rights of people. This is just insane. And
We had a figure yet? Do we know what each side has?
There's talk now that the race is going to cost between $3 to $4 billion.
Wow.
Add up all the IEs, et cetera. And that may be on the soft side. And, you know, what's so frustrating here, if we had an extra $4 billion in our country, should we be spending it on negative advertising?
Yeah, good exactly. Point. Exactly. How about some crumbling schools or health care?
It's a massive amount. What can you do? You're a pollster, and you ask people questions in detail. How can you tease out the truth? How can you get the truth out when there's so much misinformation, so much exaggeration, some exaggeration on both sides?
It's hard, and people are very frustrated about it. And people feel that they don't have reliable places to go for information. And too often you have, particularly for women voters, you have crazy Uncle Joe who only watches Fox dominating the personal network in terms of political information. A third of women get their information from friends and family.
Right.
They're desperately trying to get more information to women to pass on to their friends and family.
So there's a difference between how, is there a difference, I guess I should ask, between how men get their information and how women get their information about politicians, political issues, or not?
There is. Men are much, much more likely to get information to begin with. And that's one of the reasons why they tend to decide earlier. They also are much more likely to read newspapers. They're much more likely to get it from blogs and things like that. Women would rather go to the dentist than write a political blog. And there's difference even in terms of information. I mean, in terms of their use for Facebook. For example, men, when they use Facebook, they identify their top reasons to do it is to establish who they are, to establish identity, and to establish their positions on issues. Women say the reason they use Facebook is to pass on, to share. So dramatically different orientations here.
Yeah, and I see it. I mean, I'm looking at my own family and our own use of Facebook, and what I do with it, and what my daughter does with it, and are exactly as you described. It's funny.
So, as a pollster, what a lot of women are getting their information from people they trust, but I also hear, you know, I was in the local bagel shop, and there was a fellow seemed to be recruiting his friends to a very strange. History of the United States, a Ron Paul version of American history. And so people, I think one thing Democrats don't do is they just don't talk to people who don't already agree with them. They don't reach out. This guy has conservative friends, and I'm overhearing his thing, but his views are very weird and extreme. But he's recruiting people to them personally, individually. And I wonder, you know, how do we right the country when so much of the news is distorted, when there's so much advertising? Like you say, there's billions of dollars being spent on advertising that could be spent on something useful. I'm sure it's good for the radio stations, right?
Yeah.
And Tom?
Yeah.
He's shrugging.
He's building
but it's good for television for sure anyway. And it's extraordinarily expensive.
Right. Well, I think that it's a really good question. I don't think we fully have the answer. I think we need to really try to get campaign finance reform.
Thank you for recognizing Arizona's clean elections law.
It is
cool.
We were
cool.
Proud to work with the people, advocates in support of that to get it funded. But even there, the Supreme Court has overturned your matching for wealthy individuals.
Right.
So we have to get, I think, this law passed, an amendment passed that says, that puts some limits on this. Because in real people's minds, this is not free speech. This is paid speech, and that's different. And it isn't equal access. We're not all Adelsons. We don't all have $1 billion that we can spend. I mean, the Koch brothers alone will spend more on this campaign than John McCain spent in his entire presidential campaign.
Wow.
That's wrong. That's just plain wrong.
That is just plain wrong. And people are going to recognize that eventually.
We have individually funded candidates. The Senate race here, the two candidates are trying to claim the other guy is not a conservative.
Right.
And one fellow spent, I don't know, several million dollars of his fortune trying to convince
Will Card on the guy running for the primary seat against Flake, which will probably be running against our Carmona, which we want to talk to.
Talking to a Republican leader. I said, you're never going to convince Democrats that Flake's not a conservative.
Yeah.
So what's going on? We have our important race. Here we have a really good candidate, right, Mike?
Last I heard, Cardin had $4 million of his own money in the race.
Okay,
and it's probably more than that.
And we have a candidate. I think it's a really great candidate, Rich Carmona. We're going to have him on the show, and I think in a few weeks. Do you follow the race in Arizona? I know you're following things that happen in Montana because that's where you're from.
Well, Carmona's held a national position, and we're hoping as a Surgeon General in the Bush administration. So, what do you say, Celinda? Is this what's going on with Carmona in Arizona?
It's a very exciting race, and I'd be really interested in you and your viewers' opinion about it, or your listeners' opinion about it. From Arizona, nationally, people think this race is great, that Carmona is a fantastic recruit, that he is not a typical politician, that he has a record of public service, and people are very excited. Meanwhile, people also think that if Flake wins, frankly, even if he doesn't, given how they've been fighting out this primary, that there's a very good chance of beating whoever the Republican nominee is. And his primary just gets stranger and stranger. I mean, Flake coming out to do away with the 17th Amendment in Arizona, of all places, to say you're not going to get to elect your senators. Arizonans want to vote. They don't even care if they vote on unconstitutional. Hold in 13 states, and we found that Arizona was the only one where people said, yes, I want to vote, even if the initiative is unconstitutional, because I want my say.
Yeah.
I tell these people they don't get their say in something as important as a U.S. senator, that isn't going to fly.
The 17th Amendment, folks, allows for the voting for the Senate, and there are people called 17thers or something like this who are agitating. They want to return where the state legislature, which in Arizona is be described as a collection of kooks, would be selecting the senator rather than the people of Arizona. Arizona has, in further back in its history, a strong populist constitution and everything else.
Well, we would be so bold to call the Arizona legislature a collection of kooks. We are quoting an Arizona Republic columnist, in this case, Laurie Roberts, who has a campaign on de-kookifying the Arizona legislature. So just to describe where that
some of these people want to seize American public land, seize our parks and our national forests, and turn them over basically to the Arizona legislature to do what they want with them. That's their campaign. It's so extreme that it's hard for us to believe. From Montana, so there must be those guys up there. So.
Yeah, as I say, are you seeing this in your home state and other states? There's often a connection between Montana and Arizona. This race to prove who's the most conservative. Certainly, that's, as you just said earlier, that one of the reasons Romney picked Ryan was to somehow cement his conservative credentials. What's behind this race to conservatism, to what I consider maniacal conservatism? Repealing the 17th Amendment is close to nuts.
Yeah, at least in the voters' minds. Well, it's two things. First of all, it's the emergence of the Tea Party.
Okay, right.
Which you have seen emerge in Arizona. Now, Arizona might have been the birthplace of the Tea Party. Because it had this emerging before there was a Tea Party.
Yes, our Republicans were Tea Party Republicans before there was a Tea Party Republican. There are some old-fashioned Republicans still around and some moderates.
Some Goldwater Republicans somewhere, yeah.
But
go ahead. I mean, is there other? What else is behind the race to conservatism? Like, the Tea Party is a good one. That's a big one. And of course, it's easy for me to forget because I sort of kind of reject the whole idea of the Tea Party, but. I shouldn't say that. There's a number of Democrats, by the way, that are members of the Tea Party. Is that true?
Well, it used to be true. It's not true anymore.
Ah.
The Tea Party's really shifted. When the Tea Party first came on board, it was actually more independents and more libertarians and people that, you know, Democrats, honestly, particularly Western Democrats, probably could have found some common ground. The Tea Party's really been taken over by the right now, and really the kook faction, if you will, and they are so extreme. What also fosters the Tea Party or the right wing in Arizona, of course, is the tensions over immigration.
Right.
And that gives you part of that history. The other thing that is fostering this conservatism, so many moderate Republicans are scared to death of losing their primary.
Oh, right.
In a number of these states. So, and it's why Olympia Snowe's not running.
Yes. Locally in the state of Arizona, the Republicans have, extremists have targeted basically all the moderate Republicans. I don't think there's any of them left in the legislature. There's some ordinary conservative Republicans. I mean, a fellow who's conservative in the old-fashioned sense. But the rest of those Republicans are gone. They've been basically purged from the party. And when you talk to them, they're not ready to become Democrats because they've been Republicans for sometimes for two or three generations.
Right.
Right. Well, it's
and then the other thing you see behind us is this right-wing money.
Oh, right.
Have, you know, the Koch brothers, for example, these are the people that got their initial fame from wanting to privatize Social Security. They have come out actually to repeal the 17th Amendment. And one of the reasons for that is because they know that if elected officials have to face the voters, they're never going to get a Senate that would privatize Social Security. But if all elected officials have to do is face their state legislature, then we might get it. And so they are trying to circumvent the vote and circumvent the people. And they put up a lot of money behind it.
Have the Republicans done a good job of let's say, taking over state legislatures? I mean, there's 50 of them. Have they made some inroads there?
They made tremendous inroads in 2010. But it was the Tea Party that really made the inroads.
Oh, I see.
Picked up 660 seats, including control of a number of chambers.
Wow.
So there are tremendous inroads there. But the voters didn't, there's a lot of buyer's remorse out there.
Yeah.
You take Montana, for example. The first 13 bills that were introduced in the Montana state legislature were anti-choice bills. Montanans wanted people to focus on jobs. And we have a very popular Democratic governor who said, if it's not about jobs, don't even send it to my desk, and actually ended up doing a record number of vetoes and did a veto branding iron.
That sounds like him, yes.
That sounds good.
I've met Brian Sutter.
And, you know, said, I'm going to sear this into your mind if you can't figure this out. And it's veto, veto, veto. Stop this. We got to focus on jobs. We got to focus on good schools for our kids.
Just like we'd like to do
here. If you had one message, we're running out of time. If you had one point you wanted to make to our listeners, what would it be? What did you think is the most important thing in the election?
The most important thing at this point, when we're less than 80 days out from the election, is to make sure that we get the Democratic base out to vote. And turnout in these primaries has been record low. You haven't even had your primary yet. So get out the vote. Make sure your friends and family vote. Don't vote alone.
Well, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And I would like to have you, I guess, after the election, maybe too. You can analyze stuff. We can get wonky about all these things.
Don't forget, you can hear this on vvid.org, vvid.org. You'll have this podcast available in a day or two.
Next week, economist Dean Baker. The week after, Darrell Johnson, who's the fellow who wrote the report on right-wing extremism, who was sort of run out of the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay, we'll talk about that. Thanks,
Celinda.
And
then we'll be talking to Tom Paley. Thanks again, Celinda. We appreciate you coming on.
What are we doing in the local clubs. Democrats of the Red Rocks, meet. Find a meeting. Go to it. Vote.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.